This week on RSBNB Update, the summer escape is here, which is more than meets the eye. Javelin bugs aside, we re-examine changes to magic in the weapon diversity beta and talk about the virtue of additions instead of nerfs. Plus, the full rundown on the sigil discussion. This is RSBNB Update, episode 736, recorded Thursday, August 8th, 2019. Take a sigil, leave a sigil. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update this week. It's one of those typical weeks where we think it's going to be a quiet week, but then the week just keeps on giving, doesn't it, Tanis?
I was so ready to set back, let David take the wheel this week, and then no.
Yeah.
Does it ever happen like that, Shane?
No, it doesn't.
Like, whenever we think, okay, this is a quiet week, this is going to be good, we'll do some catching up, it'll be great, nice relax. No.
No,
always
that ain't happening.
Be chaos.
That somewhere. Ain't happening. But as you can probably guess, David is here, our resident PVM expert. You were going to join us last week, but we had to reschedule because of timing. But nonetheless, you're here this week. We got some fun stuff to discuss with you, I think. Better you're actually here this week than last week, given what was talked about in the live stream this week. But sigils, but we'll get there eventually. I think we can start off with the summer escape. And, I saw this update. And I knew we had just had the double XP weekend. Then last week we had the community event where everybody was running around in a circle to get agility XP or just, sitting in a hole in the Lumbridge Crater. And then we have this event this week where people are still yet being encouraged to skill this summer. So it has, for the last 2 weeks, it has been an amazing push to just bring that XP into RS. And I was sitting here looking at this list. Week one is the summer skilling bonanza. It runs from August 5th to the 11th. And every non-combat skill, with the exception of farming, more on that later, will receive a buff of some kind. Now, woodcutting, trees will replenish twice as quickly. I'm just going to run through these. Feel free to jump in if you guys want, if you think any of these are truly powerful or maybe not. Mining, 10% chance to give you an extra ore. So if you're working on, that Truant Masterwork set, excellent week to be skilling in terms of mining.
Doesn't work on salt.
Oh.
Salt crabs. So just keep that in mind.
Okay, fair enough. Agility, higher chance of activating the pit. David, you call this one a nerf.
The pit's terrible. It's really bad XP. It's worse XP than whatever track you're doing, so just ignore it.
I gotta agree with him on that one.
You're not wrong. Not wrong. Construction chance to retain a plank with scroll proficiency increased by 10%. Iron Man excluded. Cooking, 5% reduced chance to burn food. Iron Man excluded, but I mean, hey, if you have a cooking cape, this doesn't affect you at all.
No, or the gauntlets. You don't burn anything with the gauntlets either.
I think
you can if you're low level.
Yeah.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, you can still burn stuff with the gauntlets. Sailfish stuff, I think. If you're cooking that without gauntlets, I think that's got like a min burn level of 99 or something. So, I mean, with the gauntlets, I believe, or something like to that effect. So the gauntlets are not 100% immune on burning. Crafting, 10% chance to produce an extra urn when adding runes to them. This one's pretty good.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's so good. This one is so good. I have to utilize this one for my farming urns so I could win the skill of the month.
oh, hear that, Shade?
Yeah.
It's coming for you.
Yeah, gauntlet thrown down. Gauntlet thrown down. Okay,
if you're beating me, I'll just drop a bill on keys. Easy.
Oh, getting paid.
Oh, I can see you're getting ready to compete in that one. Well, I'm actually not competing in it because if I competed in it, I'd get 200 mil farming XP, and I don't want that to happen.
Well, we could test Telos for keys versus actually training the skill.
Well, you feel free to do that if you want.
If you do it, I'm just going to laugh. I'm going to laugh at all the tears.
Fishing spots move around half as frequently as before. Divination springs last for twice as long once a wisp is activated, and enriched nodes appear every 10 minutes instead of every 20 minutes.
Fledging, I wonder how that interacts with the cape.
It
keeps it stuck in place.
Know. Yeah, maybe.
I was doing fishing yesterday at Metaphos for strange rocks, and the fishing spots were lasting so long that I kept logging out because I was too AFK.
Wow. Fletching gets a plus 25% XP boost across the board.
Holy smokes. What?
That seems pretty good, but I guess you do. Bad. I mean, you got to give someone a reason to train fletching. And, I mean, if you weren't on double or something, why would you really train it?
Yeah, everyone just says broads on double XP weekend, don't they? Because it takes like one day to get 200 mil.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Herbalore, extra 2.5% chance to save a secondary when mixing potions. Hunter,
oh, that's cool.
10% chance to get an extra reward when you're hunting. I wonder if this affects big game hunter.
I think it must.
Yeah, that might be interesting. Yeah. Rune crafting, increased node spawns and double reward points at the rune span. I guess that's still a main trading method, because I think for me personally, soul runes is my preferred rune crafting training method, but I guess rune span is just the 100% AFK route.
It's also a trim wreck.
Oh, okay, then that's
it's a trim wreck.
Yeah, that's the main reason they're doing it, I think. It's one of the longer trim wrecks, and this makes it twice as fast.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, I even had a friend I was talking to this morning saying they were going to rinse span. I'm like, ugh, why? It's like, oh, it's double points. I'm like, what do you do with the points, dude? And he said was the altar teleports for the blood altars. That's what he does it for. So I guess there is a purpose to it.
Did they ever add a soul teleport?
Oh, I don't think they – I doubt it.
Because that seems like that would be pretty overpowered if they did.
Yeah, and the Soul Altar is the best XP. Like, if you're going for 200 mil, that's what you're going to grind out, the Soul Altar. So, yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. Smithing, double the effect of Luminite Injectors and double respects at the Artisan's Workshop. Okay, not much to write home about there. Thieving, Pharaoh's Scepter, and Black Ibis outfit drops are twice as likely at Pyramid Plunder.
Oh, that's right. There was a thing called Pyramid Plunder, right? Where,
that got obsoleted by Prif, that got obsoleted by safecracking.
There was a time when that was the meta.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. Yeah.
How I got 99.
My hours in it.
Yeah. I definitely got like 90-something thieving there before Prif came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's how you did it, remember? Like, to get into the – well, the Ironworth, you had to do Pyramid Plunder. Get there. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And all in all, there's a 25% chance to not deplete Uncharted Isle resources when harvesting, so that's why it doesn't work on Salt Tannis.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense then.
Yeah. So it's a buff to all arc things, including Bamboo. Week 2 will be Combat and Slayer, which is increased chance of rare drops and enchanted enhanced lucky items. All charm drops give one more charm than normal. Shattered Worlds will grant 100% extra shattered anima. Boy, why could we need this?
That was what it was. That's what I was going to go do. Yeah.
Do you not have Bladed Dive, Terrence?
No, I don't. I don't have the ability.
You
got to
get it. Bladed
Dive.
Oof, Bladed Dive's a game changer.
Yeah, I need that.
Yeah.
I've just been doing it with the Traveling Merchant.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
See, that's how I do my livid.
That's how I do my livid, too.
There you go.
I did all of Livid Farm in one setting. I started and didn't stop.
What?
It was complete. Yep.
Did you have any injuries after that or anything?
Yeah, I was going to say, are you all right?
Well, it wasn't nearly as bad as the continuous four-tick injuries. I used to have to ice my hands after PVMA.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was pretty rad. I'm glad they removed it.
All right. Ability to loot mass cap raids once per day. 25% increased drop rate on torn grimoire pages from Solak. Think that make you go back more than you already have been?
I go a fair amount anyways, but yeah, I guess if I was picking between that and like Virago or something, couldn't decide, then this would edge me towards Solak.
All right. All Slayer assignments will be treated as if you're using a VIP ticket. This is for 1 week, so this is substantial. Yeah. 25% increased Slayer XP.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Also, choice of boss Slayer assignments and a 10% increased Ushabti catch chance.
Yeah, I'm going to do my... Cool, I'm going to do the Slayer Codex next week.
Yeah, that's definitely a week to do.
I have to take that out, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great... It's really, like, it seems... It's interesting to me because I'm going for trim at the moment, and there is at least one, like, massive trim-related buff for each of these weeks. Which is interesting.
So this could also be seen as a way of helping out people who are going for comp and trim. But, you know, all in all, there's buffs for regular players as well. And, you know, I think that initially I was skeptical of this, but the more and more we go through this, it seems like a well-designed month event. Week three will be Elite Dungeons and Dungeoneering, which, I mean, as we know, no XP penalty in Dungeoneering and double Dungeoneering tokens. In Elite Dungeon, lore book rates will be doubled, 25% increased Slayer XP from Dungeon Masters, which is going to be Dungeon Monsters, rather. It's going to be really fun if you're doing Elite Dungeon 2 for the Slayer benefits there. Extra Ancient Scales and Draconic Energy whenever the drop is hit, and one automatic resurrection to full life points upon death per run, whether in normal or story mode, and double tokens as well from the Elite Dungeons.
David, week three, buddy. Week three.
Yeah, week three. I love... I need to do Elite Dungeons too, for IFB.
Oh, okay.
Right on.
Oh, right, because you need to kill each boss a certain number of times.
Well, plus I need the pets. I don't have any of the three.
Ooh.
But yeah, you need 100. I have my 100... ED3, and I'm almost done with my 100 ED2, but I'm nowhere close to 100 ED.
Yeah, Syria one was rather annoying. Week 4 is Anachronia, which, just running down the list, you know, 50% chance for an extra Hunter Mark, 50% more Herbie Werby XP, 10% increased chance of receiving Codex pages when traversing the Agility course, 10% extra Agility XP, 0% chance to fail, 10% increased Hunter XP, and 10% increased drop rates for rare items from the Slayer creatures on the island. And throughout this entire time period, whenever you're playing the game on a weekend from 12 noon on Friday to 11:59 on Monday a.m., one additional free clue scroll reroll per day, double skill outfit fragments, double Menaphos rip, double Thaler, double Slayer points, half boss instance cost, and a chance at mystery boxes when killing and skilling. All in all,
what?
Yeah.
Mystery boxes, now you were talking.
So, and all in all, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was just wondering, have either of you done Herbie Werby yet?
Yeah. What about it?
I think it's fun. It's really cute to me and reminds me of like 2008 era RuneScape where it was just like fun and cute and only takes a few minutes.
Yeah.
And you only get a little bit of XP just to,
nibble. I kind of like it. I mean, I'm just doing it for
it's
the comp.
It's like 30K Herbore XP, though. Unboosted.
Yeah, well, yeah. So it's not good, but it's fine.
It's not bad.
I really wish it had something to keep me going back after I do the comp wreck.
That's a good point. And last but not least, the player-owned farm will have a substantial set of buffs to it this month, including a 10% increased breeding chance, 5% increased chance of shiny animals, 10% health and happiness increase from feeding, double item yield when harvesting, 10% more beans, and 10% increased drop rate of animals from combat, and honeycombs will be 50% more effective. Kind of trying to soften the blow of the player on farm changes with this, aren't they?
Well, we don't know what those changes are.
I think they call that gaslighting.
I'm thinking that that's gonna it's gonna be XP massage. I don't know if all that other stuff is gonna happen. I mean, it wouldn't make any sense to give us all this stuff, right? And then just turn around and nerf the shit out of it. Like, that would be weird.
Well, note that the combat weekend happens the week that the sigil change was supposed to happen.
Well, I mean, that's true, but I hope that's not the case. That seems a little underhanded to me.
It seems underhanded to you. To me, it's perfect marketing. But anyways, the whole point of this is, you know, I feel not to, you know, load people up on XP. It's to truly capitalize on what RuneScape has branded themselves as a live game. And, you know, I thought that this might have just been an XP push, but I was chatting with Sirion and chatting with you, Tanis, and it's all about people keeping people coming back in the summer, keep them engaging with content. That's the whole purpose of this, is that, you know, maybe we don't need a huge headlining update in August, but boy, if you're going for 200 mil fletching, well, there's something for you this week. Yeah. Or if you're wanting to, you know, craft some new sigils, go to Shattered Worlds. Or maybe if you're working on your Slayer Codex, there's something you can do with that as well. Or if you need to go dungeoneering, hey, we got something for you in week 3. And then, hey, maybe you just got back from summer vacation and you want to have a look at what's happening in Anachronia. Perfect time to come and have a look. All of that combined with the player-owned farm, which everybody loves playing and people are going to want to have a favorable memory of.
How did you not end up in advertising?
You know, I kind of very selfishly wish that every week there was like a buff for a trim requirement. It'd be so nice.
There is. It's called the mall. You just got to stop in every day. Actually, it's every day. There you go.
And, you know, this is, you know, similar to what they do in the over the winter break with all the different winter weekends. And recall, I think it was on a survey last year, people said they wanted more time-limited events like this that weren't necessarily double XP, and here we are.
Well, and things are better than the constant currency gathering events, right? I mean, at least it mixes it up a little bit.
I'm actually have gone all – now that we've really read through them, I'm so into this. I wish they'd do this all the time. I think there should be an autumn one, a winter one, a spring one, a summer one, and in-between seasons ones.
Yeah, and you know, part of me wishes we had this discussion on the Weekly Bite this week, which you can watch at youtube.com/rsbnb. Because, like you said, Tanis, I could have advertised this thing on the Weekly Bite this week in a different way than I did. Because this week I focused on the patch notes in the Weekly Bite, when in reality I should have focused on making August about a month to have everybody come back and play the game. Which, I mean, hey, I got 3 more weeks to do that. Might as well do that next week on this.
Yeah, it's actually perfect for me, for example, because I had a summer job. June and July, but I have a few weeks before school starts again in August.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, it's kind of fitting in right when I'm play again and is actually incentivizing me to do content I wouldn't have thought I would do otherwise.
Or content that you might not have even known you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I wonder what the general sense of the community is this. Is the community seeing this as another push to load us up on XP? Or is this something that they're taking with, you know, open arms and running with?
I think the response has been pretty good.
Okay.
I haven't seen any negativity towards it. But
tokens.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. If you guys run, let me run.
Let me run, man.
I'll bring my main because I need tokens with it.
Okay.
And I won't get beat up with my main. I'll be fine.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. All right. So I think then that the summer escape has, you know, effectively just been explained to us. And it just looks like a bunch of buffs on paper. But when you put it in the context of a living game, the summer, and the impending, let's just say, presumably, impending release of mobile sometime in the next 6 months, you wind up with something that is really unique to RuneScape and hasn't been done before. And if it can increase engagement, then, well, that's, you know, a home run in my books.
We're really looking at mobile, you think, in 6 months?
I think we're looking at a beta, open Android beta in 6 months and an iOS beta in 6 months.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, okay, but is iOS shipping? That's what I want.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't matter.
I suspect we'll see an open Android beta and an iOS beta in the next 6 months, for sure.
Oh, I'm going to buy me another phone just so I can have a couple of them going. Yes.
Yeah. anyways, so let's move on to the patch notes then for this week. It's also worth noting before we do that, that Dungeoneering won the skill off, which wasn't
because
a surprise.
Of course it did. No, it was the most unpopular, popular skill.
There we go. All right. So just jumping into the patch notes right now, you know, more changes for Anachronia still this week. Overgrown idols now correctly state that they're obtainable on Anachronia within the woodcutting skill guide. Yeah, they're there, and, you know, normally they were only limited to Karamja. So we don't really pay much attention to these as high-level woodcutters, but for mid-levels around the 75 to 85 range, these are pretty good XP. The flags on the buildings in Anachronia will now wiggle in the wind. I believe the correct term they're looking for instead of wiggle is flap in the wind. The flag is flapping in the wind. You can now start a game, a big game hunter encounter with the bait in your beast of burden. You don't need to have it in your inventory. That's nice, I think. This is, you know, over an hour of big game hunting your inventory will get full. And I was actually thinking about this. It would have been nice in the Hunter Mark Shop if they would have had an update, or rather an upgrade that you could purchase that would give you all your big game hunter items noted, kind of like the player owned farm does.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
And you know, it doesn't need to be cheap. It could have been the most expensive thing in that Hunter
Mark Shop. Yeah, they should totally add that. I think that's smart.
But there's...
I'm using notepaper for it at the moment, which is kind of, it's not bad. It's just, it would be a cool reward though.
And it gives them room, something to do later on. So maybe we will get that later on.
Yes, that's it entirely. That's it entirely. Very good. Very good. For Big Game Hunter, the amount of traps being destroyed is now consistent when choosing to skip or watch the cutscene and multi-spawn encounters. I wonder what that means.
Sorry, say it again.
The amount of traps being destroyed is now consistent when choosing to skip or watch the cutscene in multi-spawn encounters. So does this mean that it was destroying... it doesn't mean it was destroying an inappropriate number of traps, but is it supposed to destroy the number of traps associated with the number of dinosaurs on the field, or...
It must have been destroying them wrongly based on whether or not you watched the cutscene.
Okay.
Like it must have destroyed a different number if you watch the cutscene versus not watch the cutscene, yeah. Which is kind of funny. I always skip the cutscene.
Okay. I watch the cutscene the first time so I can figure out what color to use for that instance.
I don't do that either, because you can just figure it out based on the number left and which things you used.
How so?
Like you could figure out. Well, so, like, if you used two of one and one of the other,
oh,
I don't know
okay.
if you do it that way.
I start off with
then
one of
based
each.
On, okay, so I do two of one and one of the other, and then based on how much HP is left, you know whether it's the one you did. So, like, if it has more than 60k damage done to it, then that means the one you picked two of is correct.
Right, okay.
And then, like, you could just tell based on the math.
I wonder if that's more efficient than the way I'm doing it.
Even if you watch the cutscene, two and one is definitely more efficient, because if the two is correct, then you only need one more dart.
Right.
So there's a chance you only need four
spears instead of five spears. Oh, and you always need five spears with one of each.
Right. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's minor. Yeah, it's minor. It's not like a game. It's not a game changer by any means.
Combat changes. Completing the fight kill now states correctly the stats for all the fight kill and capes.
You can love that there's a typo for the thing that said they fixed a typo, by the way.
Which one is this?
The kiln capes thing. Completing the fight kill now states the correctly stats. I think you want to say that states the correct stats, right?
Oh, yes, you're right. I just fixed that in my head.
yeah, me too. But then I looked back at it, I was like, that's not right.
Yeah, there's another funny typo down in these patch notes too this week. We'll get to it. You can no longer use double surge or double escape in free to play. Makes sense. Completing the Temple of Amnesia on story mode will no longer state that you've completed the Shadow Reef. Hopefully it wasn't taking the other one off in the collection log or the log. But items that are no longer valid to be affected by the effect of the lucky Hazimir's ring. Lucky Hazimir's signet ring will no longer display a chat message saying they were affected. This is that other typo. Of course, that's Lucky Hazimir's ring. I want a Lucky Hazimir's ring.
Yeah, me too.
Don't we all?
Tarn Razzler can no longer be fought in the Dominion Tower without having completed the mini quest. All right, right on. The damage from the Eldritch Crossbow special attack now works against the pillars in the next Angel of Death encounter. Is this going to do anything for us, David?
Hold on. Let me reread this.
Eldritch Crossbow against the pillars of next Angel of Death.
It's
special attack.
Yeah. I mean, it's good, right? I mean, because, well, it depends. So I don't think it'll make that much of a difference. It could make a difference in speed kills, and it also could weirdly make kills where you're doing a slower method better. Because for the most part, the way that pillars are done is that the person tanking brings necks along with them. So you're not really having soul split up on the pillars, or you take quite a lot of damage.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But if the person is far tanking, then yeah, sure, it's like definitely could be potentially useful. Although I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Okay. And for anyone wondering, the special attack of this is Split Soul, which instead of healing the player when your soul split curse damages the target, it will hit for four times the amount of life points that it would have healed. So it's just a way of doing extra damage. And makes sense because pillars aren't necessarily a animate NPC. They're just something on the battlefield that you need to take out.
Yeah.
Attuned crystal body armor and legs from the Tardian crystal shop has been reduced in price by 50 Tardian crystals in Angoff's crystal armor shop. Yeah, I heard that.
That's about... I could have used that years ago.
Oh, that was amazing going through that. How long it took you to do that. The tooltip for concentrated blast has been updated to show the correct requirements. Trapper fragments can now be obtained from Gren walls. The bank cleanup filter has been updated to include more free to reclaim items. Now, here's a big one. Super compost will no longer be made instantly when using tomatoes on the compost bin.
That was instant?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, I wish I'd known that. Did you know that,
Shane? No, I didn't. And I mean, I don't work in tomatoes anymore, so I wouldn't have dumped those tomatoes into the compost bin, but wow. Some players had the Breaking the Storm buff retained on them, and this has now been removed. Celestial Lanterns will no longer count 200 million XP in a skill as the highest. As such, these will not be highlighted on the interface. And as with other XP-giving items, though, you can still use them on a 200 mil skill if you wish. I don't know why anybody would do that, but okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just hearing crickets right now, and I don't know. I'd like to ask a 200 mil person about this. But anyways. The barrel puzzle in Daemonheim Dungeoneering will no longer block players from completing the floor under certain conditions.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that is good. It's
well, really that'd odd. Be hot if that happened.
Uh-huh.
God, could you imagine if that happened on a large?
And I mean, at least we can get larges done quickly these days and not, you know, the hour they used to take when it first came out.
Yeah, man, that would be rough.
A blocked Dayalt vein in the Mire Ditch mine can now be reached. You know, just seeing these little things from all over the world being updated, which is nice. Corrected seedling, elk prices, and added seedlings to Coden Seed Store in Priftinus.
Okay.
Well, that's an interesting one. Also on the same vein as this, runecrafting pouches now show a consistent capacity format. Dark beasts are now bored of imitating Ganondermic beasts, and once again, sound as expected. Yeah, so the sound's got messed up there. And, you know, when you think about it, I don't think there's much further from each other than a dark beast and a Ganondermic beast.
Yeah.
Well, they're both beasts.
That's true. So there's that. They are beasts.
Yeah, so that's probably where, where some of that confusion came in. Miraculous Treatment will now work on dead goutweed. Updated the message that appears when attempting to sell an animal while already having the maximum number of beans. I haven't hit that wall yet. I keep spending my beans. And player-owned farm extreme skilling potions and flasks can now be used with the potion reservoir. Now let's move into the ones on quests. And you remember a couple weeks ago, or might have been last week, we said, why is there no teleport in the teleport list to the Legends Guild, right?
Yeah.
And well, here's why. The Master Quest Cave's teleport to the Legends Guild now respects the location toggle option chosen from the Cape of Legends. So the reason it's not in there after completing all the quests is because it's actually on the Master Quest Cape. So you need to have the Master Quest Cape to have that unlocked.
Hmm.
So that's why that wasn't there for us.
Okay.
Hmm. We were saying that might be a good addition, but given the way the comp changes and whatnot worked, I am going to assume that these Master Quest teleports have also been moved to the book for people who have that cape.
That would make that a lot more useful.
Yeah, it would. Tycho, you're listening right now. Find someone with a Master Quest cape and check if this is true. Thank you. Completing the one small favor quest now correctly states that you receive an adamant stone spirit instead of an adamantite ore. What a slap in the face that quest reward is.
Wow. Wow. That is just... That's bad. Didn't R. Kelly do a song about that or something? Pee on You, or is that Dave Chappelle? Because I feel like we just got peed on.
It's definitely R. Kelly.
You receive an adamant stone spirit and an uncut ruby and an uncut diamond dropped by Slagolith, one of the cave goblins in that quest. So it's not, you know, an actual slap in the face. It's actually part of something you kill in the quest. So I guess that's okay that's there. It's not like, here, okay, you completed the quest, you get a stone spirit. It just mentions it in the quest completion log.
Okay.
Yeah. And finally, strike worms should no longer be partially blocked by the profanity filter. Also, Werby should no longer be blocked by the profanity filter as well.
I wonder in what language or in what context
that is
a derogatory term.
Who knows?
You're such a war beast, huh? Okay.
Or maybe you're such a strike worm. Worm.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think I would have taken offense to that. I've been called much, much worse.
Yeah, it's the internet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Alrighty, there's our patch notes for the week. And I think we should ask people about that. Ask if the Legends Guild teleport, if you have the Master Quest cape unlocked, can be moved to the teleports list, because that's what all the other teleports did, right? So, I mean,
yeah. Yes.
That would be an interesting thing to ask. I'll let someone with the Master Quest
cape not
ask for that.
It's not completely useless either.
Yeah, I know. The Master Quest cape
that,
is great.
That hard clue. There's a hard clue where you have to go right next to the Legends
mm-hmm.
Guild.
Mm-hmm.
I guess normally you would just take the manor farm. Or, oh, they moved that. So I guess you would take the fairy ring, but yeah.
I don't know. I'd just take the farm teleport. It's close
yeah,
enough.
It's pretty close, yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty, so, you know, we did mention we're going to have another look at the Weapon Diversity Beta Batch 2. We went through all the changes last week, so we're not going to run over them again. I think we just have a couple things to point out. On the live stream this week, it was showcased that changes in particular with the javelins needed to be fixed because as it was, they were supposed to hit all targets between the player and your target for 100% damage dealt to the primary target, and every target in between would get hit by it. But as they said on stream, if the NPC was a, quote, I think they said, thick boy, that target would get hit multiple times because the javelin would go through multiple squares and deal that damage effect for every square that it moved.
Beautiful.
And hey, I mean, this is why we have a beta, right? And for anybody who wants to experience this, this will be in the beta until Monday when it gets updated. So if you want to go see how hilarious this is, go have at it.
It's pretty funny. Three things that were accomplished. Right. One was Araxi was killed in one tick. Araxor / Araxi was done in under 3 minutes on legacy mode. Right, so yeah, someone did a sub-3 minute legacy mode Araxor kill.
How do you even kill that on legacy? Because it binds you, and you need your ability to get out, right?
You're just killing it so fast that it doesn't matter because of the. But you can free yourself. You just have to spam. It's hard to duo, but you just end up taking damage.
Okay.
And what was the third? I would not recommend Araxor on Legacy, by the way. But it's not impossible. And then the third was there's a sub-3 minute Telos kill, featuring a 6 second phase one.
Wow, I'm gonna go do this so I can feel like a tough guy for once.
Oh yeah,
it'll never happen again.
Absolutely wreck. Just any boss in the game. I'm pretty sure Virago is soloable as well. You just need someone to move it for you on phase one, and then you can solo the rest.
And this is all with the javelins, right?
Yeah, with the javelin bug. Yeah, because it hits 5 times per ability.
Yeah.
Watch. I'll go get the Reaper title in the beta. Just so I can see it come up one time. Take a picture.
Hey, I mean, if you accomplish what you want to accomplish in a beta versus the real game, and if that's good enough for you, then hey, have at it, right?
Hey, yeah, it's for shits and giggles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Of note, they did say a bunch of these effects for the weapons and whatnot are going to be toned down. Some of them are going to be changed. And I'm wondering how we feel about that.
I was saying in the pre-show that I'm not that into it because I think that if they get toned down any time, become good, and I'm going to define good here as worth using over a different weapon in the same or slightly higher tier because of its effect, then it defeats the whole purpose of diversity in the first place. Because if the outcome of weapon diversity is that the meta remains identical, except for maybe you bring a spear places as a switch, then what was the point of all of this?
I tend to agree with that. The only thing that I'm curious about is what changes they're going to make to the magic, whether that they're going to still go with weapons and spells or if they'll go with one or the other.
I didn't hear anything on that in the...
I have thoughts about this. The magic weapon...
Oh, yeah, tell us about that, because this was a big point of discussion for us last week.
Yeah, here are my
my notes for this is staff. So my quick cliff notes are staff, who cares, useless. Wand, maybe interesting, but could make combat more dynamic. Orb, who cares, useless. Book, who cares, useless, potentially helpful. So that's the quick version of it. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. Plus, they're nerfing earth spells. So, like, the best thing really was that earth spells were getting this big buff. But they're nerfing the buff to earth spells. So magic actually isn't going to improve that much. The staff, ultimate abilities hitting 100% is largely irrelevant, because most ultimates have a 25% accuracy buff. I don't know how many people know that, but if you've ever noticed that you never miss an Omni Power and never miss slot hits, it's because most ultimates have an accuracy buff. Obviously, that doesn't apply to like Meta and Sunshine, but that's because those don't really, you know, do damage. Those are damage over time, so they're not a one-shot thing. And then the wand one, this is potentially just free improved damage, but the way that rotations work is everything is largely so set in stone that it doesn't seem to me like it's going to make that big of a difference. Like, maybe occasionally, if you got really good, you could take advantage of it. But to me, that's like the best thing about weapon diversity, is the ability to make combat have a more dynamic feel to it. And so I think this is actually a good thing. The orb one is irrelevant. Like, you're already using so many runes, that, like, yes, you save a little bit of GP on runes, but I don't, like, that's so minor compared to literally any other supply, that it's not that relevant, I don't think. And then the book makes the Virtus book better than similarly tiered offhands, which is kind of cool, actually, because it's one of the worst drops you get from Nex, and potentially it'll make that drop slightly less bad.
Okay.
But it certainly won't do anything to affect Singularity usage or Core, Imperium Core usage, because those are obviously much better.
I don't feel too bad about this now. Tanis, you?
No. No, not as bad.
And, you know, to me, I knew that we've talked before that accuracy really doesn't matter, and it doesn't really matter that much with ultimates. So the staff one is, we knew that one wasn't going to be the one. The only one I was concerned about was orbs, or rather the wands. But I guess if you're constantly switching between staff and wand, it's really not going to be that big of a deal, right? That's why it's not a
big deal. I don't think so. Cause yeah, when you're four ticking, you're switching back and forth all the time. It's certainly good. But I was testing it in the beta, and it didn't, and perhaps it's because I have not spent enough time with it to figure out how to unlock the potential of it, but it didn't seem to really affect my rotations very much. The one exception that I was finding is that there are some times where in a planted feet sun, you can't get two wild magic, two is fix, and two deep impact off. And so this, assuming you crit, and normally you crit several times inside of a sunshine, assuming you crit, and this is also like will make the grimoire best in slot, like that's the biggest change, is that this certainly makes the grimoire best in slot instead of elements, where elements was better than grimoire in most places. Now the grimoire is the best for magic. So perhaps that could be I would say that's probably the biggest change.
But even then, there's going to be a choice between which one you take. So in that regard, then weapon diversity is fulfilling its job.
Yeah, and also they've been looking into making a grimoire more useful, because currently it's certainly nowhere near worth the price. Like a lot of people use it anyways because they're making enough money that it's easy to justify to themselves. But if you are like going to break down the math of elements versus grimoire, there's no place where grimoire is worth using.
All right.
So we just have to be wary of it getting watered down too much to where it was off or not.
Sorry, what do you mean?
I mean, as long as they don't water everything else down, then sounds like it will be in a good place.
Yeah, I think it'll be in a good place. It doesn't seem like there was nothing out of this that stood out to me as particularly overpowered. I thought that the just giving short swords an equilibrium perk buff is really good. And the reason for that is that oftentimes you're hitting higher than the damage cap anyways with melee, especially with a grimoire. And so having an added equilibrium effect when using Kopesh's is nice. So that'll be for people who are min-maxing, it'll certainly mean that for the most part, when zerked, you want to prioritize using Kopesh's over a ZGS. So there's the, like, little things like that are kind of interesting to me. Like I've always been fascinated by the like tiny differences that you can make in a rotation or in your gear that can have tiny effects. But if you do a bunch of those things, it adds up to a large effect. I think that that should be the goal of weapon diversity, at least from a high level perspective.
Yeah, and you know the biggest point is that you know for me this goes all the way back to before EOC, because before EOC, you had a reason to take a difference between a stab, slash, and a crush weapon, whereas now, unless you're fighting something that is absurdly higher level than you, there is no point in taking a difference between a stab, slash, and crush weapon. You just pick whatever weapon is going to give you the best damage, and off you go. Yeah. Same thing, you know, with spells to a lesser degree when you factor in the ancients. So, I mean, as it is right now on paper, it looks good. We're going to have to see what they do. I think what they said they wanted to do was largely change some of the magnitudes around.
Yeah. Which I don't, again, I don't really see that as terribly necessary. Like, I think it's, I don't know. Once they changed maces, because really, when they changed maces, that kind of signaled to me that this isn't going to be an update I'm terribly interested in, because I thought it was sort of interesting that they made a buff so good that it was better than the next tier of weapons. And well, that was probably too good.
Yeah.
That was probably too good, but it did sort of signal that like we're putting in a ton of what appears to be a ton of effort into something that is not going to be that impactful other than just being small amounts of power creep.
Well, and there you have it.
Yeah, and I think we can get to more of this later with Tycho's question.
Yeah. I also don't dislike it. I think that's the why this update's weird for me. I don't love it, and I certainly don't dislike it either.
Yeah.
It's just, like, fine.
You know, with this, do you think that what we talked about earlier in the week where we're in a position where combat is getting more powerful for the masses and it's getting easier for you at the top, obviously, in varying degrees, do you think that the only way forward with this is to make more and more challenging bosses, or is there a different way at the low or mid end to address that?
At the high end, that's the only solution. So they have to make a choice. They have to make a choice about whether they want to continue making content for the best PVMers or if they don't. And it seems like as of last RuneFest, we'll see if that changes during this one. But last RuneFest, they were very definitively clear that they have no intention of making anything more difficult than Solak or 1000 Enraged Telos. At the mid-level, it's more interesting. Like, I think that it's very interesting to me that something like Araxor, which a few years ago, well, really pre-invention, I mean, it's all about pre-invention versus post-invention, but post-invention Araxor or Nex are just so much more accessible to a wide number of people than it was previously.
Okay. So all in all, it basically depends, and it has become more accessible at the low to mid ranges, but the only way to make it add more of a challenge for you guys is to make harder and harder bosses, and I guess we'll see in the annual survey in RuneFest if they want to do that.
And that's
why you even
it,
do it. Like, you can't possibly add more mechanics to something, can you?
Well, I mean, you could always make things harder. Solak could be much harder.
I mean, you could make it more punishing, but you can't possibly add more mechanics, can you?
You could add more teamwork-related mechanics. So, like, the promise of Solak, where everyone has a role, is true. But I think they could do even more with that. Okay. So individual people on the team having a specific task to do is, I think, a thing that adds a lot of difficulty, just because people find coordination really hard. But the other thing that they could do, I mean, anytime they wanted to, they could just make a boss. Well, who knows if they can do this, but they could just make a boss where mechanics are dynamic. So instead of, like, at Telos, it's really hard, but Telos's rotation is always the same and never changes. So they could make a boss that had a dynamic rotation, but who knows if they have the capability of doing
that. That sounds like that'd be really hard to fit together and balance.
I'd imagine it'd be quite tough. Yeah. I'm just throwing out an idea.
Yeah,
of course.
All right. And, you know, I don't really want to offer too much more on the weapon diversity beta unless you have any questions for David Tanis, or David, if you have anything you want to bring up in particular, because we're waiting on the next iteration of it. And I think as it is right now, let's just leave it as it is and wait to see what we're presented with next week.
Yeah, I agree.
That sounds good to me.
All right. Fair enough. All right. So, of course, it wouldn't be a week here at RSBNB Update without new live stream information that has been released. You guys want to do the easy stuff or the hard stuff first in this live stream?
There's easy?
Anachronia drop rates.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess. Yeah, might as well. I mean, let's get that out of the way, and then we'll shove David in front of the firing squad.
I don't even think there's many states that offer firing squad as a method of execution anymore.
I don't think so.
Anyways. So, anachronia drop rates. So, when you're in Big Game Hunter and you're looking for a unique item, it's 1 out of 1,000 for a unique if you're in a single instance. That increases. Your chance increases of getting it if you're fighting in a duo or a triple. They didn't say exactly what that would be, but 1 out of 1,000 is what you're looking for unique. So that's pretty rare. Pretty rare. Pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
Totems and Big Game Hunter, surprisingly, are only 1 out of 50. I thought they would have been closer to maybe 1 out of 100 or 1 out of 200.
Me too, because I've done a lot of Big Game Hunter and gotten no totems.
Yeah. So.
But. You know, that's RNG for you.
Yeah, that makes me feel better doing Big Game Hunter.
That's you guys using your ring?
Yeah. I have LOTD and Grace.
Yeah.
Grace of the Elves, is it?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that affects it.
I thought the dwarves did, but maybe not.
No.
I don't think so.
Bummer.
Chance of a double dinosaur is 10 out of 160.
That sounds about right.
And chance of a triple dinosaur is 1 out of 160.
I haven't gotten one of those yet.
Yeah, I've only got the double once. Chance for getting the tier 3 resource to upgrade your base camp is 1 out of 150 at Big Game Hunter. Not too bad. The agility totem, when you're doing agility, is 1 out of 100, but it's per segment rather than per obstacle. Slayer, when you're doing totems, is 1 out of 300. Agility, essential oils, when you're aiming to get those, that's 1 out of 1,800, but you can get it whenever you go over any obstacles. I've already got that, so I'm considering myself very lucky with that.
Well, but think about how many obstacles there are. That's not that bad.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Laceration boots, 1 out of 8,000 off task. The blowpipe, 1 out of 5,000 off task. For if you're on feral dinosaur tasks, 1 out of 3,000. Brutish dinosaurs, 1 out of 2,000. Venom dinosaurs, 1 out of 4,000. Rippers, 1 out of 2,000. and the blowpipe will go down to 1 out of 1,500 when on task with many of the dinosaurs. Blast Diffusion Boots, Lamp and Flora, 1 out of 16,000 off task, 1 out of 4,000 on task. Devil's Snare, 1 out of 10,000, 1 out of 2,500 off task. Snagglers, 1 out of 1,800, 1 out of 8,000 off task, 1 out of 2,000 on task. Liverworts, 1 of 8,000 off task, and 1 of 2,000 on task. So these are for the
various want those.
Yeah, they look pretty good.
My plan is to do all of the creatures for the codex, and if I don't have boots by then, since I have to do that anyways, I'll just go and buy the boots. But those boots are so good.
Yeah. Are they meta-changing?
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that they make detonate worth using as just a regular threshold, because it now works where on the same timing as the other thresholds, and is the third best one after Wild Magic and Asphyx. So it replaces Deep Impact in your rotation.
All right.
So, yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're about 200 mil.
Yeah, considering it says the GE price is only 18 mil currently. And, you know, they're very rare.
They're like 200. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, and this is what I said was going to happen with Anachronia. There's the initial push of people there. So things come out in price. They spike up a bit. Then they go down as people come in. But as we move further and further from the release, they're going to start ticking back up again. So, good reason to be doing dinosaurs during the Slayer week, I think.
Yeah, it seems like it's a low enough rate that'll probably keep prices pretty steady.
Yeah. And they did also announce, of course, that weapon diversity won't be coming in August, and which makes sense given the, you know, what we saw with the javelin bug and lots of other things that are going to be tweaked and whatnot moving forward. So that was also mentioned in the live stream. Then we got to the part of the live stream that, you know, surprised everyone. It wasn't mentioned in the August month ahead, and that's that sigils were, at keyword were, being planned to be removed from the game in the coming game update on Monday when you're about to be listening to this, which I think we just need to parse this a bit.
Well, they were moving them.
Yeah, they were
from the equipment spot yes. to the
yes,
bar.
That's a very good point, and that's the first clarification that was made, is that, hey, sigils are being removed, but you're going to be able to access them as abilities for the same effect that used to be in the sigil slot. They're not going to run out. You're going to have them forever when you do that. Current sigils will be converted back into their base components, and you'll need to repurchase them from their various sources. And the new sigil codexes will cost more than the sigils did in game that we have in game right now. So, should we keep going with the information that was given, or should we look into what this actually means first? What do you guys think?
Let's see.
Because this was, you know, a change that makes sense from a design perspective. And, you know, we're going to go through this. And this is, I think, one of the benefits of doing these live streams is that they learn something that they didn't necessarily think of. And you would think that the main stumbling block for players would be that, hey, these, you're going to need to recreate these, and they're going to effectively cost twice as much, maybe a little bit around there, but they're going to cost around twice as much. But that wasn't the stumbling block.
I will say that Vital Sparks are really high right now. They're like 140k each.
So interesting.
If anyone has some that they want to sell, then you could take advantage.
Yeah. Once again, good time to be doing Elite Dungeons.
Well, I'm thinking maybe let's...
Or no, Vital Sparks... Are Vital Sparks
from
Vital
Sparks
Elite Dungeon?
Are from either...
They're from Sofenheim Dungeon.
Magister, right. Or from the Ankhs, are they?
Well, which one of these were we talking about? Oh, they're right. We were talking
about
the
Ankhs. I'm talking about the Yeah.
The other ones that come from the Shadow Reef, right? Okay. Mm.
Yeah, that's a different one. I don't know. I tend to think probably should just go through the information first, or we'll never get to it, because we have a lot to discuss.
All right.
Yeah, we do.
So you need to recreate.
We have grievances to file.
Yes, we do. The new sigil abilities will be able to be combined with one another. And this was said on live stream, and this is, I think,
AKA stacked?
Yeah, stacked. And, you know, let's just have a look at what we have right now.
Poor Terraket, a necromancer. He's, combined, dude, what do you do to deserve
What if
this?
You combine the Dragon Slayer one with the Limitless one, like you were saying?
Yeah, or Terraket, the necromancer, boss number 2 of Elite Dungeon 3. Currently, you have to pick between Limitless and Undead, and obviously Undead is much better. I don't know if you all know that, but but basically...
I mean, obviously, Shane.
Poor Terraket. I'm just saying, he's just going to get walked
I mean,
for
you're
no going
to be able to increase the damage against him by 15% and use your threshold
and still
to
Limitless. Yeah, so that so your second Zerk will be Limitless.
And they're going to have... And they're going to have all the cooldowns with them that they already do. And the biggest point here is that they can stack together. But what also did come from this was that the reason it's being removed is that in work they did with returning players, players actually found the sigil slot confusing and hard to understand when returning to the game. Which makes sense. And let me tell everybody a story about this. So we run this thing on RSBNB called an equipment calculator. And, you know, it's largely updated. If there's ever anything that appears that isn't updated, just, you know, send me a ping and it'll be updated. But on this equipment calculator, we were going to add the sigil slot when it first came out. But we said, an update that comes out and it adds 6 items for an equipment slot, and Jagex says we're not sure when we're going to be adding more to it, we decided to just hold off on this. And we've been holding off for about 2 years, and I think, what is this? We have about, what, 10 sigils in-game right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about 10 sigils.
And only 4 that really do anything.
Right. And this was taking up an entire equipment slot, and this is something that the people who are working on mobile were concerned about, and that, you know, it was a design problem for their user interfaces. So yeah, it makes sense that, you know, sigils should be removed from the sigil slot, and I don't think anybody is complaining about that. And I'm going to address some of the issues that I have with this, and we need to ask, first of all, this is a two-sided question, two sides of the coin. First one is that sigils were probably a poor design idea, the way they were brought into game from the beginning. Not necessarily the effects that they impart on your character, but just the way that they were brought in. And the fact that they were now being removed or going to be removed as a unique equipment slot says volumes about this. And I have a question for you, mainly David, but also you, Tanis. Do the sigils right now, in their current state, make sense as moving them to abilities? Do they make sense as abilities, or
I think
should
that
they be elsewhere?
They make sense as spells. That's what they should be. They should be spells. So my opinion, the way they should work is the exact same way that Vengeance or Disruption Shield works, where you could activate it as a spell and it doesn't interact with cooldown whatsoever. So you could do an ability and... So currently, you could do an ability and hit Disruption Shield at the exact same time, and there's no... It doesn't affect it whatsoever. So that's what I think. So that's my answer. So that's my short answer, is they should go in the spell book. They should not go into the ability book.
Hmm. That's interesting. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, neither.
Or like intercept. So examples would be intercept, shield dome, disruption shield.
Right. Right.
Any of the prisms, like stuff like that. That's how it should work.
Okay. You know, for me, I don't use them enough to really have a strong opinion. I think it makes more sense as an ability than as an equipment slot.
Yeah, 100% agree there. But like I said, I'm not sure they make sense as abilities either. And I think David's spell idea is probably the better way to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty.
That came out.
I'm willing to go out on a limb, and I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I'm just right about this. So, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I said all week I was deferring to David on this because I don't use him enough, and I really don't know. And I try to be honest when I don't know something.
Yeah, I use them constantly. They're quite good.
All right. Now, I have another question for you on this. Is that, granted, yeah, we're here today and we have 3, 6, 9, yeah, exactly 10 sigils in game. And has anybody thought as to what the next sigil released could be and what it could do for combat and what it means for balance? And with that being said, we know that we're moving beyond them as an item slot in your worn equipment, but whatever the next sigil is going to do, does that make sense as an ability, or does it make sense as a spell, or maybe it makes sense of some kind of parchment that you just tear up and you put in your mouth and you chew and you get that effect? And you could have something similar to the rune pouch to store all your parchments like that.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
what's the difference between that and a potion?
And there you go.
Yeah, that's just a potion.
What's the difference between these and potions, too?
Well, I think that they make sense. I think that they could all make sense as spells. Like, I wish that there were just more spells that could be unlocked from things. I mean, I'm only saying similar to Livid Farm because of the concept of doing a thing to unlock something, not like Livid Farm good or whatever.
Yeah, or even...
But just like, I think that that's kind of nice. Or even I think after, that there could be a like sigil that's within. Good for skilling too.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Just like the Light Within. So quests and mini games should unlock more spells so people have a diversity of ways to approach content. And I also think that it's not that hard to do something similar for skilling. So like, for example, every minute you have a 50% chance of getting double ore, or what, you know, whatever the balancing would be for something like that. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Right, and you know, I think the reason why they can't be added as spells is because you need to cast something. You need to cast that spell on something in most cases.
But some spells you just cast on yourself. Like that's why Disruption Shield and Vengeance were my examples. It's because Disruption Shield and Vengeance you cast on yourself, and they ignore cooldown entirely.
Potentially doing it as abilities, as Jagex wants to do. Spells,
which is bad, I think.
Potions. What if they brought them into the Herblore skill?
Herblore hasn't gotten a big update since Jadinko's?
Right,
but
see, the thing is, if you do it with Herblore, they're going to deplete, and they want these to be permanent unlocks.
Yeah, that's true.
So potions are a no. So we're left with abilities and spells, I think.
Yeah. And for people who don't know, the reason why abilities doesn't make sense is because if these sigils incur global cooldown, they're a quite substantial nerf to their use. And people don't like it when they've been doing stuff for the same way for several years, and then it's just nerfed seemingly out of the blue.
Ding, ding,
with
ding,
no
ding, 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 ding.
Great reason. So people are not a fan. And Jagex has commented on this before. Random nerfs.
It was mentioned in the live stream, and it was written down as a point that was going to be looked at. And, you know, the community, when they did that, they made the point known, but I don't think it needed to be as big of a point of contention as it turned out to be. Jagex looked at the information, and 24 hours later, we have a decision on this that has been made. And, you know, what I'd like to tell the players on this who were involved in this is that, you know, it feels as that in order to be effective on this, I don't know if this was a case where the entire resources of all the community needed to be deployed to make this issue known. I think it would have been done with Jagex looking at that because, you know, Mod Timbo was sitting right next to Mod Shawnee when this happened, and the look on both their faces when they saw this was, okay, that's a good idea. Let's talk about it. Let's talk to some people.
Yeah, we can't ignore, though, like, okay, look, the PVM community is one of the loudest communities, right?
Yeah.
But you gotta ask yourself, why is that? Well, because they've been advocating on their own behalf for a while, and the squeaky wheel does get the grease.
Yeah, it's also effective.
Yeah, I mean they do this because it moves the ball in their direction because they're representing themselves. So, look, I'm not advocating like the trolling shit or anything, but when it comes to trying to take a stand, I totally get that. Because if you don't stand up for yourself, who's gonna stand up for you?
Yeah, I'm all well and good rebuilding rotations when there's something like weapon diversity or like the removal of a bug, like four ticking or continuous four ticking stuff like that is reasonable to me. But it would be quite. I mean, it's hard to explain exactly how much I rely on Limitless to people who don't use it constantly. But particularly with Melee, good Melee DPS absolutely requires a Limitless Sigil. And there's certain things like Solak where you have to use a Limitless Sigil in order to phase something or you get a second cycle. So like the core on Solak can't. As far as maybe it could be, but as far as I know, I don't believe it's possible to phase Solak's core in one cycle without Limitless.
And David, just for people like me that aren't really in the know on this, you said you actually have it on your bar to activate it now.
Yeah. I just have a sigil slot on my bar. So whatever sigil I have in my inventory, I just like put that on my bar. It's right underneath my pocket slot item, so I could just I could just activate those directly from my bar.
Okay, so other than the global cooldown, this really isn't even that big. It's just moving it from one spot to another, right?
The cooldown thing would be a pretty big change, though.
Well, right. I'm saying aside from that, though, we're basically moving its location.
Yeah, it doesn't really affect.
And this leads to my next question. Is that if it's just the global cooldown thing, why did it feel like that the world was ending with this?
Well, because
people don't like nerf shame. That's why.
I guess that's it. Yeah, people
don't like nerfs. It's that simple.
But
and plus there will be instances where the sigil isn't even worth using.
Isn't there a case to be made where when you have two of the longest serving and the most respected JMod sitting on a live stream saying, yeah, we're going to look at that. Isn't there some level of trust that the community can have that's actually going to happen?
You know, I think you're right up until a point. You got to look at the recent, you know, the last 3 weeks has been nerf after nerf after nerf, or at least talking about it. So, When it was going to hit the PVM community, they were like, oh, hell no. We ain't taking shit lying down. And they did.
Yeah. I mean, if the Hunter thing had happened to PVMers, it would have been
It wouldn't have happened.
War.
And
it would
same
not
thing
have, yeah,
with
right,
the farm.
Exactly right. It would
that
not
wouldn't
have happened
with the farm either.
Yeah. The farm, I don't know, but the Hunter thing certainly would not have happened if it was a PVM thing. If they were just like, We're gonna nerf all damage by 50%. Like, well, that would never happen.
The breeding change for the farm is more substantial than a global cooldown on.
Sigil. That's yes. That's
we're just not as loud.
Yes, it is. But again, like it certainly means that. Well, so the difference between a one cycle core select kill and a two cycle core select kill is about 40 seconds or so. Could be up to a minute. So it's more like a minute. So basically it's like adding a minute onto all of your Solak kill times if you currently one cycle. So, you know, is that a big deal? That I don't, you know, like I don't know.
Huge thing, but I'm not a PVMer, so I can't. I mean, for me, it's Apple, so I'm just, I don't know. But I will, man, I've said all along, this stuff would not happen on a PVM level. They would not do this kind of thing. And I think we're seeing proof of that. Now, I understand what Shane's saying. Like, were they going to do this anyway and take care of it? Yeah, I think they were, because Machani was just like, oh, okay, yes. Oh, we didn't think about that. Wrote it down, right? Like, immediately. It was like, I'm going to have a meeting, and I'm going to put something on Twitter tomorrow. We probably could have waited till tomorrow, but
yeah,
I understand the community's apprehension.
Right, and my point is, I want every community in this game, every sub-community in this game, whether it's, you know, the skilling community or the hunter community or the PVM community, to be effective. And this is something we've talked about and something we learned with the evolution of combat, is that when you have a mob that is driving pitchforks into the heart of the company is going to tune out and do what they want to do, as they did with the evolution of combat. And as we talked about on our first monthly bit, we did eventually get to a point with EOC where it's, you know, relatively balanced. But we could have got there a lot sooner if the discourse between the community and Jagex was a lot more civil. So my point in this to everybody who has been advocating this week for this global cooldown change is that you need to be effective while at the same time making your point in a concise manner. And that's what irked me the most, more so than the fact that this change may or may not happen. Because, you know, looking at this on paper, you see the global cooldown, you compare that to a basic ability. Yeah, it makes sense to do that and carry things off how they have been. It makes 100% sense to do that. I have never used a sigil. I don't own any, and I'm not much of a combat type person, but I can just see that from the data that's there. And I think anybody from within Jagex would see that. And that's why I think that the reaction to this was perhaps a bit overtuned on it. But it does look like the changes are going to be carried forward, as have been suggested.
Well, so I just want to jump in here, because I don't disagree with anything you're saying in terms of community reaction. But I will say that there's an important reason why I think it should be a spell and not an ability. So if you take an ability like Surge or Escape, which I think everyone is familiar with, that recently got taken off global cooldown, right?
Yeah.
So like you could do an ability and then immediately Surge, for example. However, Surge still resets your timer. So even though you could use Surge immediately after another ability, you can't use another ability immediately after Surge. So if the sigils work the same way that Surge and Escape do, in the sense that they could be used off global cooldown, but they will still reset it, in the sense that you can't. So you won't be able to do sigil into an ability. You'll have to do an ability, then time your sigil so you don't reset it entirely, and then do another ability, which one artificially shortens the duration of your sigil effect if you're using, right? So like Limitless or Demons, right? Because of how you'll be forced to use it, you're shortening the duration of it. Or you're back to square one with it incurring global cooldown. So does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense, and makes sense that it should be a spell, not an ability.
Yeah. So if it's a spell, then this is a
strict, you don't have any of that.
Right. Then there's no concern with cool. That's why I kept saying Disruption Shield or Vengeance.
Right.
Because I think that's how it should work. Okay. It should not work like Surge or Escape. Otherwise, you're functionally in the same boat as you were with the original design.
All right. So here's what has been done with the sigils. It shows that they're still going to be on the action bar. This was a tweet that came out today. It's not going to be coming out next week because they need to do proper testing on it, but you'll be able to click them all one after the another as abilities, and you can see that the countdown is still here, David, exactly as you were saying. There's still a countdown after your spell was activated, so
that's
still being hit right here. You can see it in this GIF, and even I see that right now.
Yeah, so that's what I'm that's kind of what my concern with it is.
Yeah. They also do note you'll be able to use sigils within the middle of a channeling ability. And not disrupt that channeling ability, like asphyxiate.
Okay. But yeah, that's fine. The same is, yeah, that makes sense. It certainly should not interrupt channels.
Will be able to be used outside of combat, which we know, and will not trigger global cooldowns as well, allowing you to do combos such as Ingenuity of Humans and the Stadius Warhammer special.
Yeah, which you could already do, but yes. Yes, yeah. That's good.
So those are the changes that are coming in with this. And you think that 1 second bit of having it as an ability compared to a spell is going to be a deal breaker?
All of this stuff is just relevant at the margins of things.
Okay.
Right? So it's like none of almost nothing that I ever mention is like a game changer in the sense of can I kill a thing or not. But it is relevant if you anytime something forces you to change the way you do a rotation to make your rotation slightly less good than before, it's a nerf, and nerfs aren't fun.
All right.
Even if they should happen, like I'm not a game designer. I have no idea whether this is a good idea or a bad idea. In the aggregate, I just know that anytime something adversely affects my DPS, it annoys me. For totally selfish reasons.
All right, fair enough. I have one more thing I'd like to bring up with this.
Perfect, me too. let's go.
This highlights an issue in the combat side of the equation for me. The way combat is designed and built in this game. I personally believe that the things we're talking about right now, the people who are listening to this podcast, the people who do high-end PVM, the people who interact with, you know, Big Game Hunter, the people who, you know, have been around the block for a while know about the 0.6 second tick system. But I believe that if you go out there and you talk to any RuneScape player who's in anywhere from just starting out to probably, I don't know, maybe combat level 100, 120 maybe, somewhere around that range, I'd be willing to go out on the limb and say that there's a 50-50% chance that they don't know about the tick system. I don't have data to back this up, but I think everyone who is talking about this and maybe not Jagex is overestimating how much people know about the tick system. And my question to you guys, and something for the listeners to think of, is that should changes to the combat system and the way combat works be constantly focused on the tick system, which I feel is a minority that even feel it exists and understand it exists and understand it.
But that's our structure to work with, right? I mean, we don't want it either, but that's what we have.
Right, but I'm just saying, should the balancing be around the tick system, or is there another way that it could happen? And I don't have an answer to that, so this is kind of more of just an open question.
I don't know if I'm kind of with Tanis. I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I think it is true that many people don't know about the tick system, or at least don't really know how much it controls everything. But I think that is changing. That is changing because for the first time that I can remember, two tick skilling is fairly regularly appearing in news posts. That started with the divination update.
But I was doing it back when cooking.
Right, sure. Yeah. And then, so I think that is changing slightly, but you're not wrong. The tick system is like an annoying shackle, but it's also this, you know, it's the core of this game too.
Well, I mean, anybody that has spam clicked food and died anyway is very aware of the tick system. That's how I found out. Why'd I die? I'm clicking my food. What the hell is going on here? But I mean, no. Should it always be the consideration? You know, it's so individual. Each case is so individual. I don't know. I just want to the last point I want to make is about their reaction. And I just want to say that you can be loud and push back civilly. Those things are not mutually exclusive. You can be very adamant about your positions in a civil way. It's not mutually exclusive, right? And I'm an advocate of that. I think you should do that. But I don't want to color everybody with the same brush, because I think there's a lot of players that are in that category, but we're dealing with the internet. This is an internet game. We're all on the internet. And internet culture has a lot of memes, a lot of jokes, and a lot of trolls. And, you know, I wish it wasn't like that, but I don't think we should color everyone the same way because of them. But I do think you can be civil and stand your ground. I think the pushback on the farm was a good example of that. People put their nose down and started doing math. I mean, that's simply what they did. They just were like, okay, let's do the math, and then advocated for change according to the numbers. And it, you know, that seemed to be. We'll see what happens, but it seemed to be effective. You know, so I don't know. Being civil is always a good thing, and it's always the approach you should take. And I think the majority of people are that way.
And see, that's the reason I wanted to bring that up, because I feel like ever since EOC, anytime anything combat comes up, we go to red alert when a yellow alert might be more worthwhile.
Yeah.
All right. That's pretty much it for the RuneScape updates this week, folks. As we said, you know, you think you're getting a quiet week, but oh, no, it's not. So we have one listener question this week, then we're going to go on to tech news. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our wonderful Patreon supporters this week, who are Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, Darren L, Diana, Kyle, Logan H, Rippeth, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support of this podcast. It truly, truly does mean the world to us. So thank you once again. If you want to learn more about what these guys have all signed up for, head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb. There we do our monthly bit, which is a special bonus show. We also have Inside RSBNB Update, which is a feature where we interview one of the members of the host or production team, or have a look around their recording area to figure out what exactly happens. And we are also, of course, with that, doing the RSBNB Update Roundtable. And this is going to be happening next Saturday. So a week from the time that you're hearing this in the RSBNB Discord, we'll post information about how to join this on our Patreon page. And all Patreon supporters are invited to attend. So patreon.com/RSBNB. Be watching that. But we also do, of course, poll our monthly bit bonus show. So that poll will be going up at the same time that the roundtable discussion happens. So lots of great stuff happening with Patreon. And if you want to support us, you can head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. And for $1 a month, that's the base tier. You get full access to the back catalog of monthly bits, as well as a special mention in our show notes, the ability to join in and chat in our roundtable discussions, and perhaps most importantly, vote on topics for the monthly bit. For $3 a month, you get a special VIP rank on Discord and a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show, which is something that plays into consideration more and more as we play rich media from the game of RuneScape. And for $5 a month, you get a shout-out on the podcast every week, and you'll also gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year. So you get to hear all those clips before we stitch them into together in a clip show. And that happens in December. And there is one more thing. So should we reach $99 a month, we'll be doing a movie night in our Discord server, where we'll watch some of our favorite movies. And you can bet that some Star Trek will be included in that. So you can learn more about this at patreon.com/RSBNB. So thank you to everybody who has supported us and continues to support us on Patreon. It truly does mean the world to us. Thank you.
We love you guys.
We certainly do. All right, so questions. We got a question from Tycho this week, continuing on the combat end.
Dear OSBMB, this is Tycho Elf with two questions involving around players and their relationship with combat. For some time there have been talks about the highest end of PvM being too complicated and involving too many mechanics to learn. While I really like a game that has enough depth to keep players entertained, I do feel that RuneScape is lacking in learning opportunities. I also constantly notice that when the players talk about the higher end, they expect to be expected to know everything between 4-tick auto-attacking and how to handle 5 action bars at the same time. I strongly disagree with this and will gladly give a demonstration to prove my point. But if you could choose to either simplify the high-end PvM or to introduce more learning opportunities for the low-end PvMers, which one would you choose? Also, one of the most complicated things that the casual players seem to be afraid of is switching equipment in combat. While I do switch to a shield sometimes to protect myself from a heavy hit, I have seen how it has become a standard to switch multiple equipment within a game tick or two. It reminds me a bit of old school RS, when they must master how to switch between interfaces. With weapon diversity update being around the corner, there is a risk that this switchscape becomes more complicated. I just want to hear your opinions on a cooldown on switching your main hand weapon. This would simplify a lot of the high-end PvM while still allowing tactics like the Ring of Fortune before the boss dies or shield switching to protect yourself from a special attack. Looking forward to hear your answers and hope that you can see both sides of the same coin. This is Tycho Elf of the Nordic Lands.
That first question is a hard one to deal with because I don't think you can simplify top-end PvM, and David, correct me if I'm wrong, without going back to what it was like before EOC.
Yeah, I don't even know what that would look like other than like removing high-end, like remove Solak from the game. Like, I don't think that's an option.
All the different mechanics. Like, I can make this real simple.
Okay.
There should be more intermediate steps on the way to the highest level PvM. Introduce more bosses with gradual mechanics, bringing people up to that level. I don't think you should ever make people come down. If they are achieving that, then that's good. And not everyone can do that. Not everyone should do that.
You hit the nail on the head, because that is one of the number one rules I think we see in online games, especially living games, is that you don't nerf. You buff, and you slightly adjust to make things not necessarily overpowered.
Yeah. Because, I can't even really do necks, right? But I'm pretty satisfied with what I can do. I can do God Wars 2 and stuff like that. Is that the greatest money in the world? No. Is it just enough mechanics for me to feel like I'm, you know, doing RS combat? Yeah. And I don't want David to have to come down to my level because I'm not good enough to do Solak with him. Like, I mean, that might happen someday if I ever need, I don't know what I get, if I ever need the Reaper title or something. Like, David, can I go hide in the corner, please?
My team just took Pern yesterday to get the Reaper title from Solak.
See, that's awesome. But, I mean, you get what I'm saying. Like, it's better for me to have more steps, more rungs on the ladder to learn than it is to make David come down and there goes, I mean, there goes all of his talent, all of his skill. What? Why? For what?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Elite Dungeons are a pretty great stepping stone in between God Wars Dungeon 2 and top-end bosses. I do think that perhaps there ought to be something in between God Wars 2 and Elite Dungeons. But,
is that Araxor?
Oh, goodness, I'm not sure.
Araxor is so far beyond my ability. So.
Yeah, Araxor, I think, is at least as hard as Elite Dungeons. If not slightly harder, it depends on your perspective. But the thing about bossing in this game is that it really is even for the very best people, it just requires a ton of trial and error, I think. And it's like, it is overwhelming if you're starting fresh. But I think something to keep in mind is that a lot of the top people have been around for all of the new developments, like four ticking or increased number of action bars or switchscape as a part of invention. Yep. And it's important to remember that all of us were terrible at those things when they first came about. And the reason we have an advantage is because we are able to do it a little bit at a time. So like I forced myself to learn full manual by doing Slayer tasks in full manual, but I started off horrible at it. My DPS went down. I could barely do anything. When I was doing Araxor full manual, I would switch to Revolution for phase four because I could not both pray flick and do full main. I was like, this is impossible. Whoever can do this is a wizard, and I don't trust them. And it was just like hours and hours and hours of practice and dying and failing. And then Invention came around, and I like had to learn perk switching, and that took a ton of time. And then flanking came out, and I had to learn how to do a flanking switch, which was super, super hard. And then we started doing conch blast switching, and then we started doing four ticking. So it was like each time a new thing got added, I was really bad at it at the start. And so it's hard when you're trying to add all of it at once, but if you just break it down and just learn it a little bit at a time, then I think you'll find that it's actually not as daunting as it seems. It's only daunting if you try to eat the whole cake in one bite.
And I think that's where Tycho is going with this, because he's saying I think he's saying that a lot of those groups won't allow you the benefit of learning because you don't know it, you don't get it. You don't know you can't play with us. You know
that's certainly true. And honestly, like I don't know. Sometimes I do things with learners, and I'm willing to go with learners, but sometimes I want to, you know, play with friends who are all really good. And
right.
I guess, I don't know, maybe I should feel bad about it, but I don't feel that bad that, that sometimes I want to do a boss with just people who are the best at it.
Oh,
at the end of the day, you're supposed to be enjoying what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you're not like crapping on other people, and I say go for it, you know?
Yeah, I wish that it was easier to, you know, for a little while there was that Friends Chat boss school. I'm not sure if it's still around, but I wish it was easier for learning opportunities. I wish there were more bosses kind of in between God Wars 2 and Elite Dungeons and difficulty. But I think the thing is that a lot of people have this idea that everybody who's good at combat just started off that way. And it's just like, it's like hundreds of hours of work and effort to get to a high level. Like, I don't know anyone who is good at it right away. And weapon switching, the only weapon switching I have some sympathy for, because I cannot imagine doing it without a gaming mouse. And so that's like a financial.
That's true.
I used to use a Razer Naga, and I now use a Corsair Scimitar.
It's a good mouse. It's a good mouse. I like it.
Yeah, the Corsair fits my hand a little bit better. But I could not imagine PVMing at the level that I do without my 12 mouse keybinds on my left.
Yeah, and you know, just to have a different perspective
or my right thumb, rather.
That's exactly the same thing when I do Star Trek Online PvP. You want to do it with people who are at your level, and if someone else is on your team who is not at your level, sure, you can kind of teach them along the way, but at the same time, you kind of want to operate at that high level. And same thing with the mouse, you know, it really helps. So
I have all of my weapons and all of my prayers on my mouse. So my keys are all my abilities. My mouse is all weapons and prayers. And I feel like it would be extremely difficult to PVM without a gaming mouse. So there is that as a negative thing potentially. But yeah, they're also not the most expensive ever. Like, there's certainly like more expensive tech stuff that other games would require, like hardware in your PC wise. Like, I play on a total potato and still manage to be pretty good. I think that it's really like that's the key is more more willingness to not jump to the top end content with top end teams and just like do whatever, like literally everyone, like all I did was I just did Slayer to learn full mana, like Dark Beast, Abyssal, like I just like, that's what I did. Ganoderamix, stuff like that. And it's not fun. But the idea that like, yeah, it is complicated, but that just means you have to practice a ton. And so that's why I sometimes have trouble having a ton of sympathy for people who are like, this seems impossible. And it's just like, yes, like a lot of things in life are impossible if you want to go from like, if you want to go from sophomore in undergrad to Juris Doctor in 6 months, like that's not tough. It's not going to happen. Like, there's no way. It's like literally impossible. But if, you know, you do it class by class, then eventually you acquire skills over time.
That's a very good analogy. Do you think there should be a cooldown on weapon switching? I'm going to say no, even though I've never done it.
Yeah, absolutely not. I love weapon switching. It's what makes PVM enjoyable to me. I think it's really fun. Definitely not. And plus, I mean, that'd be such a massive nerf to DPS. Like, I think that people who don't weapon switch constantly don't realize how massive of a buff it is. And that like leads to this problem Tycho's talking about, where like someone is like, oh, like you're such an elitist because you expect me to switch between a ZGS and Kopesh's. And I'll be like, well, maybe I'm an elitist, but also the kill time differences will be massive, you know? So I'm saying no. I think that's too big of a nerf. You can't just outright nerf something like that.
Yeah. Tannis, you have anything to add?
Nope, that does it for me.
Alrighty. Well, if you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave us a DM or mention us on Twitter, and we'll incorporate your questions into the next episode of the podcast on anything RuneScape-related or anything you want to ask us. So please do just ask us. We also have the forum topic at update.rsbnb.com/ask. I normally promote that one earlier in the week rather than on the show here, because that's when it's up and active. But just remember to check the URL on or about Monday and you can get it. All right, so moving on into tech news. Apple's in the crosshairs again for Siri audio fragments that were sent in for analysis and can be traced back to users, even though Apple's game has always been on privacy. The analysis of it says that the audio fragments can also pinpoint the location of the device at the moments that the recording were made, as well as the list of names from the user's address book, the exact time of the recording, and an overview of all installed apps were also available.
Oh my God, enemy of the state. It's real. It's all happened. Do you remember that movie, Shane?
Yes, that was a good movie. I really enjoyed it.
It's here. Like, just replace the trackers with your phone.
Oh, yeah, I know. You know, I did some traveling in July, as you guys know, and I got the email from Google, hey, look at your timeline. Here's new places you haven't been before. And they're all on the map, loaded in. And, you know, I agree to that because I have the Google app installed, but that's different than this tech news.
Right. Yeah, now that's...
But, yeah, Apple in the crosshairs again, and this is something that was so egregious that only a couple days after it was announced, Apple said last Friday that they were stopping their program that analyzes audio fragments worldwide.
See, that's good. And my question is, were they trying to improve Siri's voice recognition? Like, what? Why? Why?
It's probably about 90% to try and improve Siri's recognition and about 10% to handle bug reports.
But they're not using this as like commoditizing data that they're getting from people, like information.
That's exactly what somebody commoditizing data would say.
Yeah, well, we've heard that before, right? Mark said it a few times.
And the thing is, there's no way of knowing whether or not they've actually stopped.
Hmm. That's so true. That's the whole thing with the black box, right? And is that if you don't know exactly how it works, you can't know whether it's working.
And this is something everybody had on. It wasn't just when you say, "Hey Siri," it was your Macs, your iPhones, your Apple TVs, practically everything that had that always on hot word thing. And I just activated my phone, so I won't say it again. But you get the idea.
All they're going to get from me is hearing me cuss Siri out all the time, calling her a stupid such and such, and can't you get it right for once, you lazy?
Yeah, we got lots of interesting typos from that on our message history, don't we?
Dude, I'm telling you. So if they got me, they got me cussing her out. Just don't make me dictate nibbles anymore.
Yeah.
She has a problem with that.
Yeah. So it's Apple. It's been Amazon. It's been Google. And, you know, you're probably wondering at this point, what can I do about this? Well, all of the major players in this have brought forward ways where you can have your history with them deleted. So Apple doesn't have an outright portal where you can do this. But Tanis, this is bad news for you, because on iOS and Mac, you need to effectively turn off the Hey Siri command and turn off dictation.
I can't do that.
To have it not sent in. But they say they've canceled their program, so you're going to have to take them at their word of faith there.
What else can I do?
If you have an Alexa, you can actually go into the settings and privacy section on either the app, the browser, or you can even ask Alexa to do it, and there will be options to delete all recordings on your Alexa-enabled devices for Amazon. For Google, you can do it with the Google Assistant history on an Android device, and you can also do it on the Google Assistant app on iOS, and also on the Google privacy cleanup page on the web browser. So Google, Amazon, and Apple have all detailed ways in which you can delete your history or prevent it from being sent over to them. So, I mean, at least there's that, right? It's a question of convenience versus ultimate privacy. And as much as I hate to say it, we're living in a world now where, you know, you don't have privacy anymore unless you completely unplug and turn everything off.
Yeah.
But that doesn't solve when you go out and you get caught on security cameras.
It might if you're ever murdered, it might catch your perpetrator.
Yeah, that's true as well.
I mean, so there's a happy thought.
Yeah, so I mean, at least Apple got ahead of this, and it really didn't become much of a story after that. But it's just something to think of. And if you have an Alexa or you have a Google Assistant device, you can head on into the link as detailed here in the show notes as to how to turn this off. That's the USA Today article. All right, next up, you guys remember Meltdown and Spectre?
How could I ever forget, Shane?
So these were a series of vulnerabilities in Intel-based chips and their derivatives last year. And of course, that means practically everything that's been designed in the last two decades, where you would be able to use a feature of the chip that would allow a malicious program to read the contents of memory that it shouldn't have been able to read. And the name Spectre comes from the term speculative execution, which in itself means that the chip, when it makes a decision as to allow you in when you enter in a password, will often execute the case where you enter your password incorrectly and the case where you enter your password correctly. So it's possible that data could have been read from memory if you entered in a password incorrectly, and it would have been giving you that data if you did enter your password correctly. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that was the initial suite of vulnerabilities. There was also Meltdown, which was fixed in terms of various updates to the Windows operating system, and pretty much every other operating system, including iOS, received these updates. But now we have a new one of a Spectre variant that has been exploited, and it's a proof of concept, meaning it's not out there in the wild, but it was bad enough that Intel, along with pretty much everybody else in this industry, decided that they wanted to issue a fix at the software level, and that arrived in the July Windows Update package that we would have received in July with Patch Tuesday. So the only reason we're hearing about this is that, you know, it's already been patched in Windows, and, you know, this is something that we have to deal with. We're not going to, as we said, see the end of this until everybody's moved on to the new round of chips that are going to be coming out in 2020. That's how long it takes to change microarchitectures like this. And as far as we know, no one's actually managed to exploit this in the wild, as it's called, that is the greater public. But it's an interesting issue to think of because it underscores how it's something so theoretical and so bare bones can potentially cause a problem with your computer. And this is just another reason, if you take anything away from this story, to just run Windows Update whenever it provides your patches to you. Do you guys have any questions about Meltdown Inspector, how they work, anything to that effect?
No, I'll be happy when this is over, but I am not looking forward to building another computer.
Yeah, because that's going to be the only surefire way that will move beyond this. And, you know, Spectre was supposed to be the one that would be hard to exploit, but lo and behold, someone figured out how to exploit it. So, fixed in software, but still there in hardware for older chips. And this goes back to the 1990s, believe it or not, too. So, it's not something that just appeared. It's been around for a long, long time. All right. Our last piece of tech news is something that we've danced around many times before. And, you know, it's something that is important to us as gamers and important to us as covering a game that has microtransactions in it. And that's Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony will start requiring new and updated games that sell randomized loot boxes on their consoles to reveal the relative odds of getting individual game items through these loot boxes. So any game that is on the Nintendo platform, the Microsoft platform, or the Sony platform, and you realize the only real big one missing here is Steam.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't Steam's whole business loot boxes at this point?
Well, no. Steam just sells the games. But the interesting part of this is that most of the people who have their games on, you know, the Sony PS4, the Xbox One also have something on Steam. So if they're going to make the change to the Xbox or the PlayStation, they're also going to make that change to the PC. So this is a huge deal for loot boxes going forward, I think.
Is it, though?
I think it is.
I'm glad Rocket League is doing what they're doing.
Yeah, Rocket League is completely getting rid of crates later this year, by the way.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. I'm always leery when we leave it up to the companies to regulate themselves. If your argument is that loot boxes is gambling, just knowing the percentage, I don't think is effective at curtailing that at all, because we all know the odds of hitting the lottery is lower than getting struck by lightning, but yet a lot of us buy a lottery ticket.
But we don't know precisely what it is, right? I think that knowing precisely what the odds for on something, like imagine if you're playing blackjack in Vegas, and after the dealer dealt you your hand, there was like a little card that was handed to you for your chance of each specific, like your exact mathematical percentage on each thing. You know, I kind of think
that's called counting cards, and they will take you outside and beat you down.
Right,
for
that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. Is like it's certainly a step. I think it's a significant step in the right direction, although not enough. But still, it's something.
All right. There's also a press release from the ESA that says Activision, Blizzard, Bandai Namco, Bethesda, Bungie, and Electronic Arts, Take-Two Interactive, Ubisoft, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment, and Wizards of the Coast are among major publishers that will start disclosing loot box odds by the end of 2020. In addition to all these other ones.
Do you think we're ever going to see the day where if there's an item, you can buy it? You just buy it. You know,
that's maybe, not but enough. See, the thing is, you could do that, but the price is just going to be so damn high that people are going to say, oh, I'll just take my chance with the box instead.
I guess. I don't know. I'm really not a supporter of, like, any loot box
predatory
style.
Predatory gambling.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. Yeah.
You're against predatory gambling and exploitation? What a hot take.
I know, right? I'm making a bold stance. You heard it here first, man.
That should be... Really, the show title should be Tanis Comes Out Against People Being Preyed On.
Yeah.
he's been doing that for years.
I'm with you, though.
Yeah, and considering with this, Apple already requires odds disclosures in the App Store. Google has the same thing. China and South Korea also require loot box-equipped games sold in those countries to disclose odds in recent years.
Big bad China requires it of everyone, and we're just now getting around to it. Wow. And on their mobile games, of all things. Holy cow.
Well, I mean, it's good that it came from Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony rather than the top down. Because what this allows for is greater freedom in terms of determining the best way to maintain profits and keep bringing revenue in through the video game. And it can also, with that same regard, allow video game makers to determine whether they want to have more of a focus on subscription fees or if they want to kind of split it down the middle.
Shane, I love your folksy little conservative, like, Canadian way of thinking. Because in my mind, they did the least they could possibly do so that they could make as much money as they possibly can.
Oh, that's the whole point of any business.
But they're doing the least that could possibly be done.
Yeah, that's
not
the whole
most
point.
Effective,
that's
the
whole point.
Least.
That's the whole point of any business.
But if it's top down, like that's why you need a government to be like, hey, I don't think so.
They think that if they didn't do anything, the governments would do it because they've seen where the ball is going is in the EU, specifically Belgium and the Netherlands.
Well, yeah, I wish we stepped up, but hey,
and they
want to
get ahead
better
of
than
it.
Nothing. But yeah, you know.
Going to be interesting to see Rocket League doing this first because, you know, there's just so many cosmetics in that game, what they'll be purchasable for. That's going to be a big, big question.
But, I mean, that's so much better. Like, that's cool. And they just released, what was it? It was either this week or last week. They released a really cool, what was it? Knight Rider, I think it was.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's the one that got on the picture here.
Yeah, dude. I want Kit. I want it. I want it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you told me that Overwatch would do the same thing and I could just buy whatever, I would have bought my Canadian flag that I've been trying to get for three Summer Games Overwatch events for 99 cents or $2 or however much it would be, rather than trying to open all these boxes by just playing the game over since 2016 at this point.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. And I finally got it on the last night of the event this week.
Hey, congratulations.
Alrighty, that's it for tech news. Moving on to some other things. Read the new Informer Roundup at informer.rsvmb.com, of course, covering music and lots of other fun things relating to Anachronia. And, of course, in terms of my talk that I had, the RuneScape Endgame, which I'll be talking more about at some point in the future, I can guarantee. But aside from that, just sign up for the Crafting Skill of the Month. That one starts in 1 week time from recording this on – or sorry, 2 weeks time from recording this on August 21st. Sorry, I messed that up. But tonight we got a Farming Skill of the Month that's starting. So I'm not going to tell you to sign up for that because by the time the show is out, it'll already be started. So it'll be interesting to see what everyone gets up to in this. And, you know, I would sign up and I would love to compete in this just to show everyone how broken the farm is. But if I do that, I'll get 200 mil farming XP, so I'm not signing up.
I'm going to laugh my ass off.
Because I want to keep getting XP in the skill.
I'm going to laugh my ass off if our elite PVM expert whips everyone's ass in farming. Like, I am going to get a good chuckle out of that one.
Well, let's see what you guys do. I know you guys have both signed up, right?
I have not.
Oh, okay. Well, David has signed
up. Is it till the end of the month?
No, it's for 1 week.
Oh, 1 week. Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1 week. All right. Speaking of things involving XP, let's talk about the achievements we got here. So starting off on August 7th, we have Zach Master with 99 cooking, also Pouncing with 99 fishing on the 7th as well. Moving on to the 6th, we have Lord Gimli with 99 defense. And on August 5th, we have State Bird with 99 thieving, Nighthawk 1 with 99 crafting, and Protoman 807 with 120 dungeoneering also on the 5th.
We've got Feroxcritos with 99 agility on August 4th, Zach Masta with 99 runecrafting on August 4th, Seth E. Roth with 99 magic on August 4th, and then we have Alex Peaks getting 99 dungeoneering on August 3rd, Magicking with 99 slayer on August 3rd, K. Matt May 22 with 99 dungeoneering on August 3rd, and Issa Rapp getting 120 invention on August 3rd.
Nicely done.
Awesome. Well, we also have Mood Dragon X with 99 dungeoneering on August 1st, Zach Masta with 99 dungeoneering on August 1st, Patapolo with 99 runecrafting on August 1st, Wang Jing with 120 invention August 1st, Magic King with 99 construction on August 1st, and Jay Hamo with 99 dungeoneering on August 1st.
Bit of the aftermath on Double XP weekend there, I see.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't remember people going all out like this on the week after, so yeah. Nice to see.
Yeah, it certainly is. Good job, everyone. What do you got for your pick of the week, Dennis?
Well, I have a cute, just little fun game. It's only $10 on Steam, and it's called Turmoil. And it's kind of this old westy type of theme game where you go and you drill for oil.
Right on.
Because it's a game, you don't destroy the environment. It's great. It's really cool. But it's all old westy, right? So like there's different, like there's saloons and stuff and you can talk to people. And then essentially there's like this auction where parcels of land will be auctioned off and it's you against three other NPCs. And you get your piece of land and then you have to start prospecting and then you have to start drilling, and then you have your little wagons or carrying your oil from the oil rigs to I don't know, whatever you call the place that sells your oil, and you basically, whoever has the most money at the end wins. But it takes a little while. It's not real quick. It probably takes a good hour or so to go through a whole entire game because there's different stages and all that. And of course you upgrade your rigs and how you find your oil, your prospector guys, and just all kinds of different stuff like that. It's really fun. It's just a fun little oil drilling game.
Nice.
Love to see games being made that are inspired by Old Town Road.
I think this was pre-Old Town Road, but I'll take it. I mean,
it says drill for oil like it's 1899.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
For the record, oil was discovered in Alberta in 1947, and life hasn't been the same since. That's very good. Link will be in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com for this. I like these little odd picks of the week that we have from time to time on Steam. Really good. Really good. All right, what have we been up to? What have you been up to this week, David?
Well, I've mostly been up to IFB stuff. So I finished my 100 challenge modes for all the God Wars Dungeon 2 bosses, which was quite nice. That was really a grind, especially Vindicta.
And you need the pets for that, right?
Yeah, I still need to go back and I still need to get the pets. I only have one of the Vindicta pets, but I did get the challenge modes done.
All right.
You need 100 challenge mode for each. And then I got my comp cape back. Cause I didn't realize that I thought for a while, the only way to get the totems was Big Game Hunter and it was just RNG, but you could get the navigation totem with like 20 minutes of work. So I got my navigation totem, and so I now have my completionist cape back. I still have to do the one that's time gated, or the one with the amnesty, the build a tier 3. What is it? Tier 3. It's like the, whatever the general thing is called, like the base camp, tier 3 base camp,
town hall.
Yeah, I still need to build a tier 3 town hall, but I'll have that done within a week or so. So I'll have that done in plenty of time.
Alrighty.
And now I'm doing, I've been doing Runespan during the show. Just getting these points, trying to take advantage of these double points, which I didn't know about until you read the patch notes, or the notes on them.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice this week. Alright. What are you up to, Tennis?
Well, as you know, I've been saving off and on for a double XP weekend, and I have finally decided to, I guess I can tell everyone what double XP weekend that it's going to be. It will be the Game Blast weekend, so next February, essentially. So the next double XP weekend, I'll focus again on Junior, and then the one after that, I'm coming out, and I'm coming swinging. And I hope to do some fun stuff with all of the communities that I'm involved in, and I'm looking to break records, man. I ain't messing around. I'm starting to save now. So if that gives you any indication of what I have planned, it's going to be nasty.
Herblar?
It's going to be fun. That's just one of many.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm talking 36 hours straight.
I'm going, dude.
I'm going to break every record I can find. It's going to be fun.
I did.
And we'll do it for the kids.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I did 65 hours one double XP weekend.
Whoa!
That's great. I did it with a friend who's also playing, and we both maxed.
Oh wow!
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he was. It was like a LAN party sort of.
Oh, that's nice.
We were both on the same.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's nice.
Yeah, he came over to my house, and we played 65 hours. Drank a lot of Red Bull.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, then,
Red
it.
Bull and like really like ice cold showers to wake us up whenever we. Like that, it's so effective. It's the most effective. Like when a new boss comes out, and I wanted to spend a couple days straight playing it, I just ice cold shower is the best way to keep me up. Is what I found.
I don't like the sounds of that.
I hate cold water so bad.
Yeah. Oh, I mean it's terrible, but like you know, when you gotta max, you gotta max.
You gotta do what you gotta do, right?
Yeah, we gotta make sacrifices in this life.
Do people have ice cold showers like that to stay up with their clothes on, or do they take their clothes off? Because if you take,
I took my clothes off.
Because if you keep your clothes on,
because
if you leave your clothes on, that cold water is gonna stay on you longer.
Yeah, Shane, that's true.
Have you ever taken a shower with your clothes on?
No.
Like, are you standing in your shower in swim trunks?
Of course not.
Loofah.
I usually like putting on a nice winter coat for my showering. So.
I was just thinking, never mind, I won't say what I was going to say. I think we can move on to me.
Oh, we took separate showers.
I wasn't going to ask that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And we took turns.
All right.
Although it would have been a lot more efficient if we hadn't. We wasted a lot of XP now that I think about
and water.
And
water. Right, exactly. All sure. These are, really, I would have done this differently going back.
But as for me this week on RS, I went to Big Game Hunter and I've started my hunt for totems there. So that's what I'm working on currently. But aside from that, I am still farming beans on the player-owned farm. But that's pretty much it. Last week was dungeoneering with that hole in the well thing, which was absolutely absurd. But beyond that, not much interesting to report, and hopefully we can get some of these farm changes done, and we'll see how the farm is after that. That's one thing I'm very eager to watch out for. But so that's why I've been farming beans in the meantime and hunting for big game hunter totems. And it's really not that bad after you get double surge and the mobile perk. Once you get that all kitted out, it's really not that bad. So.
And the 30% faster traps is quite nice.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to upgrade next at my base camp, is upgrade the hunter stuff. So,
yeah, it's, you probably have it already. It's only 50 points.
Maybe. I don't know. Was that tier 1 or tier 3?
It's just, you just go to the hunter rewards shop guy. So
oh,
if you
oh, okay. Okay,
yeah, so if you have 50 shop. Hunting points.
Yeah, I should be able to get that then. I'll do that. I'll do that. Forgot
and
about
it makes
that.
It makes doubles much more viable as well.
Ah, neat.
To have the 30% faster traps.
Alrighty, well, that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be definitely keeping our ear on the Twitters to see what we got for the sigil changes and the weapon diversity changes and the farm changes. I suspect next week's going to be another busy, hectic week. But until then, we'll see you guys next time for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care.
See ya.